Yes, we can. Take Obama, where the policy questions on the table involve what exactly he plans to do about issues like taxes, abortion, globalism, and national defense. Obama and the Democratic Party have been buoyed by poll results showing growing dissatisfaction with George W. Bush. A Washington Post ABC News poll reported on May 13, 2008, that Americans are gloomier about the direction of the country than they have been at any point in 15 years, with 8 out of 10 now saying the country is headed in the wrong direction. Yet despite the poll, showing Bush's approval rating had dropped to an all-time low, the poll also showed McCain remaining competitive in a hypothetical general election matchup with Obama. Results like these should give the Obama camp pause before locking into a general election strategy where the main goal is to say repeatedly, Bush McCain, Bush McCain, Bush McCain. McCain has had a deserved reputation as a maverick, so much so that he has had a difficult time in 2008 convincing conservatives that he is one of them. McCain most likely will position his campaign close to George W. Bush, but only on issues of foreign policy. If the 2008 election comes down to a question of which candidate is the best commander-in-chief, McCain wins and Obama loses. Despite the unpopularity of the Iraq War, most Americans want to see the United States stay long enough to obtain lasting results. Claiming that electing McCain will essentially produce a third George W. Bush term simply will not be credible after McCain has sufficient time to differentiate himself both from Bush and from conservatives on a wide range of issues, including even global warming and carbon taxes. McCain is much more of a centrist, especially on domestic issues, than he is a conservative Republican. Truthfully, Hillary Clinton's positions on many issues resemble McCain very closely. A key reason, Clinton may well have been the harder candidate to beat. Even McCain said he would have preferred to run against Clinton, probably since their closeness in the Senate suggested a much more amicable general election campaign than the predictable battle against Obama. Cracks in the cult of personality. By entrusting his strategy to David Axelrod, Obama signed onto a campaign where his life story and personality would be put forward to voters as the substance of the theme. The liability here is that few have life stories without blemish, and Obama's life story may not be as heroic as Axelrod would like to portray. By definition, cults of personality create larger-than-life stories of their central figure. But the facade is vulnerable to careful investigation. One crack and a key feature of the life story invites more scrutiny, and inevitably, more cracks. That Obama's father was a polygamist and an alcoholic may or may not tell us much about Obama, but that Obama does not present the true story about his father outright in his autobiography in an easy-to-follow fashion leaves the reader to discover the revelation, much as Obama claims he himself did. Voters who are led to see Obama's father as first presented by Obama himself may suffer disappointment and decide to reevaluate Obama when the truth is known. His father was not the crusading young goat herd who ventured forth to get a U.S. education, ultimately at Harvard, so he could return to Kenya to lend his skills as an economist to the development of the newly independent state. In reality, the father turns out to be a socialist who failed because of continuing tribal politics in which the father came out on the losing side. Obama devoted the entire third section of his autobiography to the African nation Kenya. Axelrod has projected Obama's rise as a triumph of internationalism. So how, then, is anyone to be faulted for looking closely at the details? When Obama ventures forth to Kenya to conduct his own personal roots journey, he gets connected with a politician named Raila Odinga and Odinga's presidential campaign. Widely disseminated reports that Odinga has signed a memorandum of understanding with leading Islamic figures in Kenya raise our eyebrows. Next, another document surfaces suggesting friends of Obama and prominent Islamic figures in Kenya have each contributed more than $1 million to Odinga's campaign. The controversy built when Odinga lost the election and appeared to encourage an outbreak of tribal and religious violence in which Christian churches were destroyed while no mosques were damaged. When Odinga finally ascended to share power by being appointed prime minister, all were relieved that the civil violence subsided as a consequence, but disturbed to learn that Obama has been a player in the unfolding drama in an ongoing relationship with Odinga by long-distance telephone. If Obama continues to support Odinga, is he thereby condoning the post-election violence that brought Odinga to power, and a radical agenda from the left